From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made December 2015 when Governor Andrew Cuomo announced the Upstate Revitalization Award program. We're talking about the five-year commitment to funding on this program. And now, project leaders say nearly all of $500 million in awards has been committed. 100 projects in the Finger Lakes region will benefit from the funding. The Finger Lakes Regional Economic Development Council is calling the collection of projects the United for Success Finger Lakes Forward Initiative. So what does it cover? Leaders say businesses related to photonics, I should say. I guess that's optics. Photonics, optics, I should know by now. Agriculture, technology, all included. And they hope the investments will create about 4,000 new jobs. Outside the Finger Lakes, the URI funding has also benefited Rock the Riverway, as we know, the Downtown Revitalization Initiative. They've been working on anti-poverty efforts. But some critics of the projects have had questions. As reported by the Democrat and Chronicle, about $100 million in funding is out the door already, and only a quarter of the 100 projects are currently in motion. That's led some people to ask what's taken so long or what tangible progress has been made over the last few years. Leaders with the Finger Lakes Regional Economic Development Council say they are building a foundation, and this is just the beginning of the work, and they have ambitious benchmarks and goals to work toward. They say the Finger Lakes region is 2 years ahead of schedule, and only $500,000 in funding remains to be committed. Well, this hour we discuss the latest with the projects, how to understand where is the money going, how do they make those decisions, who stands to benefit, and what are the benchmarks that they're setting. Our guests will also answer some of the questions that you have, if you have them. We'll welcome them now. Bob Duffy, co-chair of the Finger Lakes Regional Economic Development Council and president and CEO of the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce. Welcome back. Thanks for being here, Bob.
Thank you.
Also here is Ann Kress, co-chair of the Finger Lakes Regional Economic Development Council and president of MCC. Nice having you back. Thanks for being here, Ann.
Thank you.
And Vincent Esposito is the executive director of the Finger Lakes Regional Economic Development Council, regional director for the Empire State Development Finger Lakes Regional Office. I never know if I'm choosing the correct title at the time. Did I choose the right ones?
Pretty much. Well
good
done.
Good enough. So thanks for being here. There's a lot to talk about this hour. And, you know, Bob and I were talking about before the program. He hadn't heard this until today, but you know what some of the critics have called this? The Hunger Games. You love that, don't you?
Well, I think it's a misnomer because, as I said before,
he hates that.
Competition drives the world, and if you had no competition, you would not get the plan and the hard work. And I'm going to defer to, you know, Ann Kress and Danny Wegman and Vinny and Joel Seligman before that, and all the teams and committee members have volunteered their time, have worked nights, weekends, trying to put the best plan together. And I think the Finger Lakes plans, since the very beginning, they put outstanding plans together. I don't think they'd have as high a quality if it were not for a spirit of competition with the other regions around the state.
Okay. And, go ahead, Ann.
I was going to jump in and say, we talk about the competition, but what we don't talk about is the collaboration. And the reality is, before this process was put in place, every single municipality was competing against the next to try to get these dollars. And I think one of the genius aspects of this is it brought together regional collaborations at the table so that instead of working against each other, you were actually working with each other for a broader vision. Certainly, each region then is competing for those larger dollars, but there have been collaborations built at that table that have nothing to do at this point with the funding and everything to do with a common understanding of what the shared goals are.
So I want to start by asking Vinny Esposito to kind of give us a sense for how much money is out the door, what we're talking about in terms of commitment, how close we are to at least having a full plan of commitments. Then we're going to talk a little bit about benchmarks, and then we will work through individually where that money is going, how the decisions were made. Most or all of it committed now? What are we looking at?
That's right. So at our last public meeting in April, the Finger Lakes Regional Council announced that of the $500 million from the Upstate Revitalization Initiative, which, remember, is just the largest of the governor's upstate economic development programs, $498 million of that has been committed to 100 projects. And that is a five-year program that now has its commitments made within 3 years. That's where you alluded to in the beginning of your introduction, being 2 years ahead of schedule. I certainly consider that a positive first, that the governor stayed through with a commitment on the program, something that's been a signature of his with regards to upstate economic development. And in the terms of an economic development space, that we made these commitments is a good thing. Getting these dollars out the door to improve our economy is the whole point of economic development. And it's something I think this regional council should be very proud of and commended for.
And over time, as you have kind of walked through this process, as you were open to public application, there was a look at tech. There was a look at, you know, so photonics and optics. There was a look at the agricultural industry in this region. There was talk about helping with anti-poverty. You know, I don't want to ask you to put a journalist hat on, but is there a singular headline or a theme that sort of unites this, Vinny?
The theme is that it's all consistent to the Finger Lakes Forward regional strategic plan that the council created in 2015 to win the competition. So this program and every other economic development program that the regional council has a say in where its tax dollars go is all based on and compared to that strategic plan that the region and its stakeholders created. So that's the theme. This is the foundation that plan envisioned, put into action over the last 3 years. That's the theme. It's true to that plan for the pillars you mentioned, optics, photonics, and imaging, ag and food production, next-gen manufacturing technology. Those are the industry pillars where we focus our state investments, as well as then the enablers that allow any industry to go, focusing on workforce development and giving people's pathways to prosperity, focus on entrepreneurship and innovation, giving people an opportunity to start businesses and grow them, and taking advantage of our higher ed and research sort of network in our region. Those are the ways in which our Finger Lakes Forward plan called out this is where our state investment should go, and that's what we followed through on.
And a point to make, go back to Ann's point. I think in the past, if you look at state funding many, many years ago, it could be your local senator or assembly member would be lobbied, he or she would put money down. The governor made a point when he created the regional councils in his first year, his first term, is that those decisions should be ground up. As Vinny described, this process is really all about collaboration at the table, committee work, every area of the region coming together with their suggestions and thoughts and trying to create a balance between just not Rochester and Monroe County, but the other eight surrounding counties. And I think it is a great example of teamwork and collaboration, putting our best foot forward for what is best for Finger Lakes.
So let's talk a little bit about benchmarks here. When we're looking at benchmarks for job creation, how many jobs and in what time frame is realistic?
So in the URI alone, it's already retained 6,200 jobs just in the program, the project commitments that have been made. We estimate in those 100 projects, there's going to be 4,000 direct jobs created. But what's really important to note is that in economic development, the indirect job creation is many times what you're trying to get at, especially with the investments we've made, some of the largest of those being AIM Photonics and Rock the Riverway. Those are not direct job creation projects. They are facilitating that sort of ecosystem of economic development to have private-public partnerships that will create jobs down the line with what you put in place. And so those are the benchmarks on jobs that we look to use, and there's, of course, other benchmarks we use on private investment as the other primary one.
What's the timeline that we can, you know, is there an easy way? And tell me if there's not here. I mean, like, journalists like to be able to say, in 5 years, we should be able to look at net new jobs as X, or in 10 years, or in 2 years, or whatever that number is. Is there a number in terms of 2, 5, 10? And is there a number, you have about 4,000 direct new jobs, but indirect, can we benchmark sort of ballpark what we think we can do?
We don't predict timeline or amount with regards to the specific URI investments. However, at our last regional council meeting going forward, which we can talk about later, the council also decided to set targets on its goals, a goal of 30,000 net new jobs in the region, regardless of how they are created in the next 5 years, which matches virtually the amount of jobs that were created in the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And reduction of the number of people living in poverty. Can we put sort of a benchmark goal on that?
So we have been partners with the Rochester Minority Poverty Initiative, which have led the benchmarking and the goals setting for reduction of poverty in our community. We contribute towards that in many different ways.
Mm-hmm. And I think I would add that one of the goals of this process from the very beginning was to create individual wealth. And that's really those investments in the communities. But I would say that some of the jobs that we're talking about, they're entry-level jobs with the goal of creating a broader career path. And it's one of the reasons why we have these targeted industry sectors, not just because they're things that are already strong in our region, but because they are areas where opportunity is possible, where career growth is possible. So your entry wage won't be your exit wage. And we are, as Vinny mentioned, partnering with the Rochester Anti-Poverty Initiative, but in a very clear way around looking at career pathways that lead to sustaining wage jobs.
And yeah, to answer your question specifically, because I don't mean to, we set a number of 20,000 fewer people living in poverty in Rochester in the next 5 years.
In the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And one of the impactors can't just be the regional council. I mean, look at the poverty in Rochester. There's so many issues that impact it. The results of city school district over decades, you have that. I think one thing we should think about is people look to our MAPI. What can our MAPI do to reduce poverty? They are the voice for it, but if every organization at that table and others begin to look at their internal systems and start making those changes internally, because there are impediments. There are huge impediments to people today, transportation, childcare, education issues, and many, many others that aren't just the in a realm of a regional council or MAPI or Dr. Brock. It really is a larger conversation. And if we're going to make progress, we have to look at those systems and really be serious about some really strong change going forward.
So listeners, if you want to call the program, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK. Do you have questions or comments as we walk through some of the specifics on where the money is going? $500 million committed to roughly 100 projects. It's a good chance for you to ask questions or get some answers on that. 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, it's 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Email us, connections@WXXI.org. I think the benchmarks, whether it's anti-poverty or job creation, economic development, I think they matter. And I think without them, we're sort of adrift and you can have a lot of taxpayer money spent without sort of figuring out if it works. And it's not just whether this works to hold people accountable, though we'd love to hold you all accountable, and I'm sure you all want to be held accountable. But it's also about making better decisions in the future. So whether it's Bob or Ann or Vinny or anybody else, you want good information because you've got a strategy, you've got a plan, you're working with very qualified people, and you've got an idea that over the next 5 years, next 10 years, things are going to happen. And so I want to ask all of you to give me a sense for, you will know that something went wrong if what, Vinny, what, are there a certain number, I guess probably just job creation, probably, but, you know, how should we be looking to kind of honestly say, hey, this did not work out the way we thought if X doesn't happen by Y?
There's one benchmark that's been troubling a lot of us lately, and that's when we look at overall GDP of the region. So even though jobs have been growing slightly, population has even slightly been growing, we have not been growing from a gross domestic product point of view, the overall economic activity in the region. We need to change that. We need to stop replacing old manufacturing jobs with service sector jobs that don't pay as much and build more wealth in the community. So to me, the benchmark that we set on GDP of increase of 10% over the next 5 years is a really important one to see if we're actually getting traction and moving the needle for our regional economy.
And I would add to that, part of this discussion has evolved from attracting new businesses to helping existing businesses grow. We know that there are businesses and industry and individuals who are committed to our region already, that maybe more of our attention should be focused on them and helping them grow what's already here rather than going out and trying to pick up something new and bring it back. And then when somebody is here, to help them grow, help them develop that workforce pipeline, help them see how they can work together, again, collaboratively, to spur new business growth. So I think that's also sort of a change in the direction of the council.
I would add wage growth has been stagnant, and goes into the whole thing of trying to increase personal wealth and regional wealth. And, you know, while the minimum wage legislation, you know, it does sound good and is helpful, I think that if a business makes decisions to reduce their workers or go in a different direction with that, sometimes there's unintended consequences to what is considered positive legislation. So looking at ways to really grow wages, you want to increase people's personal wealth, because I think the minimum wage, say $15 an hour, how do you live, how do you raise a family on that? So I think even that is not enough. But I think part of it, too, is looking at upstate New York differently. I mean, the governor's done a phenomenal job investing up here. It hasn't happened in past administrations like this, but we are different. And sometimes regionally, we should be treated different, be it legislatively or policies, because if a business, a 5,000-person business closes up in Manhattan, it's, I would say it's like a tree falling in the forest. Up here, it's like a tree falling on your house. And the net jobs that I think Vinny and Ann mentioned before, we have to balance that. Sometimes companies make decisions to go elsewhere. So if a company is leaving or downsizing, that exacerbates the situation we're here. So trying to create a much more fertile environment for investment. And the state's tried that. I think that no governor has invested more up here than Governor Cuomo has. But I still think we have to do a better job, as Ann said, helping businesses here grow. We might not attract as many as we like, but helping what's here, keep what we have, and grow that and organically in the future. And I think that's a focus we're all trying to look at.
I want to ask you, Bob, just a little bit about something that is not central necessarily to upstate revitalization, but it was a big debate, and it was an area that, if I remember correctly, you had a pretty strong opinion that you wanted to see Uber come to upstate New York. And of course, it's here, and now you've heard the recent debate about whether there should be sort of an Uber strike and workers not getting paid as much as they should and whether they're treated well by the company. Most people who drive for Uber will tell you that they're not doing it to sort of replace a career income, though I'm not sure about everyone who works for Uber. Any regret about supporting Uber? How do you feel about what you're seeing in that debate?
No, because, you know, that's the way of the world. I mean, we're, again, taxicab accessibility in this region is not like being in Midtown Manhattan. It just isn't. So I think Uber and Lyft, they serve a purpose. And plus, it's the changing in our economy. It's our, you know, next generation leaders that you're seeing all this begin to evolve. So I wouldn't, you know, criticize it. There's probably been some hiccups along the ways. I think you'll see much more of that coming. I think whenever I've used Uber, it's been great. My son-in-law uses it quite a bit. Sometimes they're not always available at 3 o'clock in the morning for catching an early flight at the airport. They don't have maybe the core number here all the time, but it is a great way to earn some money. And, you know, I think it's just part of the evolution you're seeing in our society. Things are changing. Country clubs and chambers, and I mean, we're all being challenged with people having different views. The whole thing with electric cars coming up and really self-driving vehicles, these are all coming down the road, which I think will have even a greater impact on our transportation going forward.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about where the money is going specifically. The number one largest sector or industry that we're talking about is what? Vinny Esposito?
Optics, photonics, and imaging.
All right, so what's the number there? What's the combined number that you're investing there?
By far, you're talking specifically the Upstate Revitalization Initiative. It's $209 million of the $500 million is going towards various OPI, we call them, projects. Most notably, of course, the AIM Photonics partnership with the Department of Defense and the colleges that are participating.
Okay. And, you know, this obviously it's been heavily covered. I think at times, maybe to some of state leaders' frustration when it comes to understanding timelines and benchmarks there. What's realistic in terms of what our photonics industry looks like in the future? Now, here we are, May 2019. Photonics is going to be how big of a part of the economic scene in our region for a long time to come?
Well, I want to say that the transition of our economy from a manufacturing economy to a knowledge-based economy is frustrating by definition. It is a slow process, but we are in the middle of doing it. The AIM Photonics partnership and that project in particular, despite all the superlatives that may have been put on it and the expectations that have put on it, is unfolding. It is a little more delayed than we would have liked it to be, but the clean rooms are operating at Eastman Business Park. It's a national consortium that is working with suppliers throughout the country and in our own region in a way that it was intended, with the Department of Defense as its primary focus, and with expectation that it'll still provide benefit indirectly to Rochester manufacturers long term. But there is no set timetable for that to happen. It is an ongoing thing. AIM Photonics has 2 more years of operation to it, and may continue and hopefully will continue, whether it's continued to be supported by the federal government or completely self-sustaining in private.
Jump in. Okay.
Oh, I was just going to add, you know, when we look at the broader field of optics, photonics, and imaging, certainly it's the history of our community, but it's also the future. So MCC has one of, I think, only 3 optics systems programs in the country at a community college level. I think we have the only optics system technologist program in the country at a community college. Our program is the largest that's ever been. Every one of those folks has a job before they even graduate. If we could clone them, we would. We have hundreds of students who are studying in dual enrollment in local high schools in optics, photonics. And this is really part of the future. So, you know, leaving aside AIM Photonics, optics and photonics, it's the heart of Rochester. These businesses continue to grow. OptiMax just expanded in the past couple years. You know, the skills gap there is incredible. If you're listening to this and you're interested in optics systems and imaging, you know, let someone know. If Mike Mandina were here, he would tell you if you have an interest in music, if you have an interest in art, you may have a brain that would work in this field. These are opportunities that are out there, and I think that's one of the reasons why that's such a significant part of the pillar that we built.
If I could add AIM Photonics, I know there's always been a lot of criticism. Here's what I think was the genesis of that. When it was first announced here back with then Vice President Biden and the governor, nobody in this room or the governor did predict it would create 6,000 jobs. It was said by somebody. It went public. I think that there are those that are reminding us of that every day, and there's no way the TAP facility is going to have 6,000 people working in it. It's no way. But what AIM Photonics has done, I mean, the investments, the instruments, and the technology it is bringing, the partnerships around this country with just fantastic universities and minds, the Defense Department, we're on a map. And it is going to draw a lot of very, very bright people here, a lot of research-oriented work here. We don't know all the ancillary benefits yet, but had the governor not put the money up, it would be in California or Arizona or maybe Columbia or up at MIT. It's in Rochester. That's really interesting. Jonathan Gruber, the MIT professor, was in town a few weeks ago. His study is put forth that Rochester, New York, in his mind, is the number one position across the country to be a new technology hub. Again, as Anna Vinny said, we have tremendous brain power here, tremendous legacy. Our universities, our businesses here, a lot of talent. It's understated. This is just one more investment, which I think the governor is giving to us to help us grow in that area. And I do think down the road, we're going to see benefit after benefit, but it becomes part of this, you know, the public debate. And I think it all goes back to the prediction of 6,000 jobs, which always reinforces under-promise and over-deliver. That's what we all should do.
Okay, Evan, I want to mention, last week in June, our OPI industry is really going to be on display. AIM Photonics is having their national member meeting here. We're having a week-long conference called the Light Sound Interactive that will showcase a lot of our suppliers and the technologies that are happening in our community. And that'll be culminating with the Luminate New York Awards Ceremony all the week of Jazz Fest. So Rochester will be putting its best foot forward and get a really good sense of the energy behind the whole OPI industry that are in our region.
In a moment, I'm going to take Steve and Bright. No, we lost Steve. Steve, give us a call back. Jane, we'll take you as well. 206 or 209 million. What was the total again?
I have 208.8.
Okay, it's about $209 million. So some interesting math here. Some listeners might say $209 million in photonics. How many jobs could you create if you just created $50,000 a year jobs and just paid people the money? The answer is not as much as you think. The answer is 418 new jobs if you're paying $50,000 per job, which I think Photonics are hoping to pay more, if you're going to employ someone for 10 years out. And, you know, 418 jobs would be great. But the point is, I think that they want more than that, though Bob's, you know, I understand Bob's point about the whole $6,000 jobs number boondoggle, which everyone wishes had never been uttered, but, or at least never been kicked around in the public. So, having said that, here's the question that none of you will probably want to answer. Then 10 years from now, what's the range of how many people you think are working in photonics in Rochester?
Remember, there's already 17,000 working in this industry right now. If 5G takes off the way it could increase very quickly in this region. If it doesn't, if the technologies related to integrated photonics and putting light on computer chips the way they're doing at AIM Photonics takes longer to develop worldwide, then it could be a longer tail. But the whole point in that public-private partnership for the state side, we invested in the equipment here in Rochester so that the people with the expertise can be the magnet for that global development of that new technology. So there's no way to say what it might be. But I was with a company 2 weeks ago who's looking to provide a 5G supplier sort of technology, and they're incredibly excited with what they see as the ramp of implementation because of all the devices that would have to be put in around the world for that technology to be enabled in a way that we all expect to be able to use our cell phones in the very near future.
I have no idea what 5G... So
you don't want to talk to us about it, but it's about the speed of the signal.
I know it is, but what I mean to say is Syracuse has covered this, New York City, everywhere 5G is kicked around. There's local opposition where people say, I don't know if it's safe. I don't know if there's sort of health aspect. And I am the most ignorant person ever.
Sounds like a show, Evan.
Well, it is, but I'm asking you, do we know enough to... Is it safe?
We don't know.
I don't
enough.
Mean to be like a conspiracy
theorist.
But this is
to scare like anybody. Uber. The society is changing. Our telecommunications are going to improve.
Right.
Having integrated photonics as a solution towards faster communications is going to happen. That is what we are putting those investments towards. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Okay. Yeah. And absolutely, that is a separate conversation with those with expertise. It is not meant to be a everyone should be scared of 5G comment. I'm just saying I am very ignorant on that. And it does seem to be coming. It seems imminent that we're going to be seeing this. So there's $209 million earmarked there. And Jane's just got a question along those lines. Go ahead, Jane. Hi, Jane. Is Jane there? Do we have Jane? Nope, Jane's back on hold. I'm going to try this again. Can we try it again? Let's try it again. Hi, Jane. Go ahead. We don't. We don't have Jane, so I'm going to put Jane back on hold and come back to Jane in just a second. And before we go back to Jane, Stephen Brighton called in asking, what about traditional trades? Someone like Steve, who has spent his career working in traditional trades, is saying, when you guys got in a room and are working for the years that you've worked on $500 million, do traditional trades factor in?
Absolutely. And those are a lot of the indirect jobs that we've been talking about. So when somebody comes in to open up a plant, we need folks in the traditional trades. Those indirect jobs, when people are hired, right? You hire a plumber, you hire someone to take care of your car. So when we talk about the skills gap, recognize that that's the multiplier effect. And there are some areas that have higher multiplier effects than others. Advanced manufacturing, for example, food production, very high multiplier effects, because for every one position of somebody working that line, you're going to need more skilled tradespeople. HVAC, for example, in food and agriculture. So, you know, when you hear people talk about a skills deficit or needing to bring the trades forward, or you hear the unions talking about looking for apprentices, that's what you're hearing, is there's enormous opportunity for those in the skilled trades because of these investments. They're not necessarily direct investments mm-hmm. in those fields, but you can't do anything without those workers.
I'll add to that. Every company I go into, they'll tell you there's a shortage of machinists, of skilled trades. And I think that's, to me, Ann and MCC do a great job preparing people for work and a workforce. But parents and guidance counselors and others have to realize, too, there are other careers besides just heading off to a four-year school and taking a liberal arts degree. There's a lot of things they can get into and learn that will provide them an opportunity to earn a living for their entire lives. And I don't think a company I've come across that has a sufficient number of technical people in those areas. Again, trades, HVAC, machinists, tool and die.
Welders.
They're out there. And they're, you know, we have great opportunities here for education and training. And I certainly would give MCC a call because they have an array of programs. They're recognized around the state and around the country for their workforce development programs. But those are positions they're aging out right now and maybe not as attractive to kids coming out of high school right now. And we have to try and change that and shift that attitude if we can.
All right, let me get Jane again. Let's try this again. Go ahead, Jane. Now I locked something. Now I did this. Hold on. This time this was user error. Now I'm going to ask the engineer to unlock it. We got you, Jane? Go ahead. Hi, Jane. Let me try this again.
This is 5G.
I don't know what's going on with Jane.
Your 5G comment.
Jane, call us back on 5G. Let's do this. Can we take our only break of the hour? Maybe what we'll do is we'll take our only break of the hour. When we come back, we're talking to Bob Duffy, Vinny Esposito, and Chris all about we've got Jane now? Let's go ahead. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Evan?
Yep.
Can you hear me? Okay.
I can hear you now.
Well, it was mentioned that photonics was one of the receivers of all of this money, about $209 million. And you asked the question of somebody on that panel, when would we get the jobs and how many jobs? And they were not specific. They went into how frustrated they might be with this and also how slow it might be. To me, that's not an acceptable answer. The second thing is about green industries and companies, especially as it pertains to energy, solar energy as one example. I thought we were putting that on the front burner. So how does that play into what choices were made as to what companies and industries would be favored with this money? So two things. I'd like to have questions answered, and I'd like to have explained to me about the green and climate control industries and how they were or were not favored in giving out this money. Thank you.
All right, Jane, thank you. So just briefly on the first point, she's saying the timeline and the vagueness she thinks unacceptable on photonics. Vinny?
Yeah, I realize some people feel that way. That's what I alluded to when I talked about the frustration. This takes a long time, and that's the way it's going to be. That's building a new knowledge-based economy and making an investment in a long-term technology of integrated photonics and hoping that that is going to be the fuel for things like 5G going forward. There's just no other way to say it. There's certainly no way to make a specific prediction. On the green component, I think it's of note that, you know, some of the things that don't get talked about a lot, there's another Manufacturing USA Institute through the federal government that's headquartered in Rochester. We're the only city in the whole country that has two of these, and it's the Remade Institute based at RIT, and its whole focus is reducing the embodied energy in manufacturing processes, which is a big piece to reducing our carbon footprint in our country, and that's something that we were proud to put in another private-public partnership based at RIT with URI dollars. And the other point I'd make about green decisions or green infrastructure and investment, the URI, remember, is just one of the largest economic development programs. But if you heard Governor Cuomo on Friday on this program, you heard him talk bigger picture about his commitment to reducing our carbon footprint and the incredible investments and sort of policy leadership New York State has put towards investing in things like solar farms and wind and all kinds of renewable energy. So I think the state's commitment to that is really very, very notable. Our partnership is regional council and investing in projects that are green. There's a new first ever solar power townhouse program and project in Geneva that's being built right now. We invested that through the regional council. So there are plenty of examples where the new world and identifying new energy sources and sustainability factor into the decisions that we make.
All right. And when it comes to the kinds of green jobs, when the governor was on this program, you know, Vinny's right. The governor voiced a little bit of pushback against some of, I would say, people who are work in sort of citizen involvement, activist circles, who have said New York State's green plan, essentially a Green New Deal on the state level, is ambitious but not ambitious enough. The governor said, if you don't think it's ambitious enough, then you don't think any state's is. It's actually, it's pretty well documented now. New York State's is the most ambitious and aggressive plan in terms of investing in new energy. It's a question of what it yields and how quickly. But Jane, I appreciate those questions and the phone call. So there's roughly 209 million of the 498 that's been earmarked so far. Let's take our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back and work through more of how the Upstate Revitalization Initiative and the Finger Lakes Regional Economic Development Council has decided to go ahead and parcel out this money. So Ann Kress, Bob Duffy, Vinny Esposito, and more of your feedback next. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about outside interventions when school districts are struggling. Rochester is having its own debates about who should be in control, whether there should be mayoral control, state intervention, or some other plan. Well, the Rochester Beacon is hosting a forum with a lot of different stakeholders and some people who've done work in other cities and states when it comes to those outside interventions. We'll get their experiences next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Robert in Fairport is next on the phone. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I just question the whole idea of having a bunch of public sector luminaries like the three people you have on your panel kind of decide where, you know, $500 million or whatever is going to be spent in public money in various endeavors. If you look back at the most successful private sector companies in the Rochester area the past 20 years or so, you got Wegmans and you got Paychex. And I think if somebody went back 20 or 30 years ago and said, let's invest in a couple of areas that are going to give us a lot of jobs, I don't think supermarkets or payroll processing would have made that list. I just think the money would be better off in the pockets of the people it was taken from and taxed from. I think that I would trust them to spend the money in such a way to create jobs than this trio of people, including people that don't even have private sector experience. I mean, I just don't think that this is a productive way to create jobs.
All right, Robert, thanks for the phone call. Let's go around the table. Bob Duffy?
There are certainly a lot of people in the private sector who are involved in this process and a lot of great minds. I mean, Danny Wegman co-chaired this regional council for many, I think, 7 years or 8 years. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have people like, you know, Danny Wegman at the table and many others, those decisions really go through a combination of public and private sector. I mean, the governor's view is having private sector business, education, the public sector together. So I think they have done that. And there's been a lot of investments here that have benefited the private sector. So this is not just a couple of people in government making decisions. I mean, the whole point is this is a region-wide process that involves a cross-section. I think we have great minds in the private sector and public sector and higher education, and I think they're all at the table for these.
Well, and I would say, I know it's probably been a while since we've talked about this, but to remind folks that the three of us do not make these decisions. What happens is we have a broad table that is the council that includes public and private sector individuals. Then further than that, for each one of the pillars that you'll talk about, whether it's food and agriculture or OPI or next generation manufacturing, there are private individuals who are running companies who are in those businesses who serve on the work groups to help advise those strategies. So the goal is really to get that on-the-ground expertise that the caller referenced, that I'm not going to pretend to know what it takes to run Sitor Optics or Optimax, but the folks who run those companies can advise us. And that's exactly what they're doing around the strategies for these industries. So that's, I want to make that clear.
And I'd like to add, the best economic development is always private sector-led. The best projects don't even involve state tax incentives. But I think what the caller is missing in just the nature of economic development in the world economy that we've been living with is that upstate New York has had a cyclical decline for several decades. And I give Governor Cuomo credit for recognizing that the state needs to do more by creating things like the Regional Council and the URI. It is the state participating in the transformation of that economy. And to Bob and Ann's credit, and to everyone who participates on the Regional Council, the only thing different here is we have a plan that we are trying to implement, and that our region and the stakeholders in this region have a greater say in where the state makes those investments. That's a positive thing. You may not believe that government should be involved in spurring the private economy at all, but I think that's been pretty proven to this point. That's not the way the world works anymore, and certainly not the way upstate New York is going to get back on its feet and continue growing and have a future that we all sort of foresee it to have.
Look at the Amazon company that is probably one of the wealthiest in the nation, if not the world, leans heavily on public sector investments. T-Mobile, which is hoping to come here if their merger is approved. Interesting thing is that their projections are if it is approved, they do come here, they're asking for zero money. Nothing from the state, nothing from the local government would come in total private investment. We'd love to add and up our private investment, but I would give Vinny and Empire State Development and the government kudos. A lot of things happening now would not happen without their participation and support, because Chamber of Commerce and Great Rochester Enterprise and other organizations, we don't provide money or funding. No, we don't. We serve our members and do the best we can. But Empire State Development works with the county and city, and clearly with leadership of the governor, the investments they've made here have been profound, and we would be a whole lot farther behind had it not been for that work over the last 8 years.
All right, $209 million to optics, photonics, and imaging. Agriculture and food production, how much, Vinny Esposito?
Of the amount committed, about $24 million.
$24 million, and we're looking at a number of individual projects. If you guys want to kind of pick out one or two here that stand out in terms of why you think this kind of investment is going to yield jobs, either sort of sustaining and growing jobs, and how you made these decisions, would be very helpful to understand it.
Bob, why don't you talk about American Packaging Corporation, because I think it's a perfect example.
American Packaging, actually, I applied for a job there when I was 17 years old. That's over just in the 10th Ward area. Peter Shotlin and the Shotlin family leads one of the top packaging companies really in the country. We were in a competition for their headquarters and expansion between New York State, Rochester to be specific, and Iowa. And it was intense. And Iowa came with their A game on this. But thanks to New York State, thanks to the governor and Vinny and Empire State Development team in Monroe County, they are here. They're expanding in Chile right now. The number of jobs, I've almost lost track of. They are growing by leaps and bounds. So I think a couple hundred jobs projected. Huge impact for our economy here. That's, again, a private sector investment, but going back to one of our core investment in the private sector, but really going to our core strength right now in growing jobs. And it packages food. We're home of Wegmans. Vinny can talk about the competition with with three different regions for agriculture coming up. And we are in a hotbed for agriculture. And thanks to Cornell and thanks to this area we have, I don't think any area of the state is as blessed with our food growing capabilities. And American Packaging, Ledestri, obviously Wegmans, so many others. And the innovations going on today in food are just fantastic. So I get a little wound up on this. If Bill Strasberg from Wegmans is listening, he's a huge advocate for some of the things going on. But that's a job creator and also one that provides great food and great health for our residents.
Yeah. Okay. What's on this list? Because people know Ledestri's. A lot of people know American Packaging. People are familiar with photonics, et cetera. What's on this list? And now let's take it in any direction you want. That's a company or a sector that people would go, I've never heard of that. That is going to be interesting to watch. That you think, we're putting a seed here, and this has a chance to really explode.
Well, not necessarily in food and agriculture, but I think one of the things that's been a bit of a surprise since we started the whole URI process has been the growth of IT jobs and the number of IT jobs that have located in downtown Rochester. So you have Datto, you have Live Tiles, you have Cloud Checker and Village Gate. And what, again, to this notion of attraction, each company has an ecosystem that attracts another company. And so one of the challenges we're starting to have now, and this is an odd thing to say, is finding an IT workforce. We hear often the negative side of the economics of upstate, but here is a real positive where you've got company after company that's coming and expanding. And now there's a real push around the colleges and universities to really step up their game around producing IT workers, because part of this is that spirit of entrepreneurship. And some of these are smaller companies that continue to grow. When Datto started here, it did not have hundreds and hundreds of employees. Now they've almost run out of space at the Metropolitan. So I would say one thing to keep their eyes, we should all keep our eye on, is the growth of the IT sector in ways we never could have predicted when we started the URI.
And that's real and growing so fast that I was with the head of the Rochester Downtown Development Corporation this morning, and they can't even keep track as quickly as the companies are coming into the Downtown Innovation Zone. They're up to over 183, and with some of the co-working spaces, they think there's even more entrepreneurs creating companies in this space where maybe Rochester hasn't seen that growth and other part of the country have. It's now happening here, and it's real. And there's crossover. One of the companies in the ag space that you haven't heard of that we invested in is called Real Eats. It's a technology company that's emerging meal preparation and delivery.
I'm a customer.
Anne's a customer.
Real Eats?
Real Eats, based in Geneva, with huge growth plans in a very fast-growing industry. And these are the types of investments we're making, in addition to the ones that get all the attention in the larger sort of public-private partnerships, in companies that are enabled because we have the URI, because the Regional Council had a plan, and because we have such a large team of stakeholders working to implement it.
Love Beets, another company that I could never eat beets as a child growing up, but beets are everywhere now. We are a big market for them, and it's actually a combination of Ledestre, Love Beets, the company themselves, and we have packaging companies, innovation going out through Cornell, their innovation center, a lot happening there. You know, a couple areas, the craft brew industry. Mm-hmm. And I know a person that wrote a great book about the Finger Lakes wine industry many years ago. You look at those that are...
I got no state money.
But what a great investment. But those areas here for tourism, for economic vitality, they're all growing. And so I think, as Anne mentioned, a lot of organic growth with things you might not even think about. And, you know, I think we're trying to support those businesses as best we can. Governor deserves credit for eliminating a lot of the regulatory issues with wine, beer, spirits, and distilleries. We were part of that with he had summits, but I think we are almost a model state across the nation in those areas. And you drive around the Finger Lakes region, around the city, you can see it. I hope that trend continues because it grows jobs. It's a great attractor for customers and business and tourism. And I think we have a lot of vitality going on now. Last thing, the restaurants. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have great restaurants. I wish the Simpsons would spend some time coming up here and spend some real time up here. Everywhere you go for a community our size, I think our food industry and our restaurants are fantastic.
We're not all still upset about the Simpsons, are we? Come on.
No.
That was funny. All right. Now I'm going to get some angry calls, too. We got to laugh at it. Got to learn. Next-gen manufacturing and technology. How much money in this portion?
In total, it's $107 million. When you include the large investments we've made into placemaking and things like Rock the Riverway and Downtown Innovation Zone, which in our strategic plan, they are strategically aligned because of the unique aspects of downtown and Eastman Business Park and other things. But that's where also the investments in companies like Live Tiles and mm-hmm. Datto and some of the tech world that Anne mentioned is really starting to become very, very exciting and starting to produce results already.
And Evan, Live Tiles, I mean, it's another thing. Anne mentioned before Datto. I mean, it's created out of a RIT graduate's garage in Connecticut, hundreds of jobs downtown now. Live Tiles, we competed, they're all over the world. The last competition was with North Carolina, and they picked Rochester to come. And they're probably a golf shot from where we sit right here. And
it's actually
they're,
my favorite
they're growing
building in High
fantastic.
Falls. It's a really cool building.
They're a great company. But, you know, they can go anywhere they want. They chose here. We're too tough on ourselves sometimes locally. We need to take a step back and realize what we really have and the talent we have here. Is it perfect? No. But I think we are poised for some great stuff in the future.
And what we're building.
Yep.
I just want to jump in. You mentioned The Simpsons. So The Simpsons started airing before some of the folks who are working in these companies were even born. So think about that. I mean, what we're really talking about is the return of millennials. I think we lead the state. We're about 15% higher than anyone else. The restaurants that Bob mentioned, the companies that we're talking about, the folks who want to live downtown, folks who use Uber, who use Real Eats, who use DoorDash and Grubhub. It is a shift in our economy, and it does make people uncomfortable because these are not the same jobs that were there at Xerox and Bausch & Lomb and Eastman Kodak, but these are the career paths of the future. And I think what you're seeing is that sense that things are changing, and they're changing for the better. And that placemaking that's happening in Geneva and Penn Yan and Batavia, you know, people are thinking about these as revitalized communities. And that mindset shift is often the first leading indicator that things are really changing.
You're betting pretty heavily on the neighborhood of play expansion, $20 million on what's now known as the neighborhood of play around the Strong Museum as it expands as well. I imagine everyone at the table has a real belief that is a growing part of this.
These aren't bets. They're investments.
Hey, listen, Senator, you can call it what you want. It's an investment in the neighborhood of play. Fair. We'll use your term here. $20 million and... listeners are probably very, very well aware, especially as the inner loop fills in, that this could be a revitalized part.
I'd say that in jest, but it's true. Remember, these are not bets. We are not paying this money out. These are performance-based incentives. So when these companies or organizations like the Strong Museum do what they say they're going to do, invest the money and create the jobs, then they get the state support. It's a very important point. That's why all the money hasn't gone out the door yet and why the impact of all this is going to be coming for years to come. Strong Museum, in particular, our largest tourist attraction. It's as much of a no-brainer it is possible to incentivize such a wonderful institution to help be a part of the Downtown Innovation Zone revitalization that's happening and the connection with the neighborhood of play and the corridor of play into what we're trying to do with our waterfront. This is all intentional, and it's all coming together where we're really literally recreating downtown Rochester.
And can I just briefly credit our colleagues over at 13 WAM who recently reported on this? Part of the reason that our guests at the table here are investing, if not betting, in something like the Strong in the neighborhood of play expansion, is the fact that, as John Maggiore was saying, one of the governor's senior advisors on a recent trip, the number of millennials in every Finger Lakes County and in the city of Rochester, we're talking 25 to 34, has increased. So yeah, population sort of ebb and flow, and you know, Vinny mentioned actually region-wide up a little bit. You know, there's a lot of talk about trying to stem the tide of young people away. 25 to 34 is kind of heading strong, and the neighborhood of play is a very significant place for young families, et cetera. So if you want to create a city where people don't just move to the suburbs, you know, that is part of the mindset there. But before we lose the hour, I want to just hit this point one more time, because this is something that matters to taxpayers, to listeners. It should matter a lot to us as journalists. Vinny talked about performance incentives here. So we're investing roughly, you're investing $500 million. And if you've got, you know, in these individual projects, $500,000 here, $420,000 here, $8 million here, $6 million here, that doesn't meet certain targets, how are you going to get the money back? How does it work?
It doesn't go out the door yet.
It never goes out
the
door.
That's the point. Projects will be reduced if the project doesn't come to fruition the way it was expected. That's already started to happen in some projects. And the website we launched to be accountable to this will recognize those reductions. And remember, this is just the largest economic development program. Just in economic development, there's been $6.2 billion committed under Governor Cuomo to our region alone. This is $500 million of it. So these investments are wide-ranging in housing, in energy, in economic development, in transportation and infrastructure. This is all now being coordinated in a way that wasn't before. But the performance-based nature ensures taxpayers aren't put out on a limb and hung out to dry when something doesn't happen. We simply then have the money to reinvest somewhere else.
I have an email from a listener who just wants to put in a bid for the last $2 million that apparently you haven't earmarked. I imagine the door is closed on that. Are you still hearing from people who want?
Of course we're hearing from them. And this is not the end of the funding that's available.
Not at all.
The new round of regional council funding just opened on May 1st, and applicants can apply until the end of July for a myriad of state economic development programs. That work continues. This was just a one-time, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to invest a targeted amount of dollars that the governor created and put at our disposal, and we've now put that out into the field.
I have Melissa weigh in, but I want to just reinforce Vinny's point. Going back to my last life, New York State was always in the back seat compared to other states who gave money up front. They built buildings up front. They put a lot of cash up front. One of the misnomers about state investment is that you don't get the money, with few exceptions and projects, until you create the jobs. So you have to create those jobs first. People complain about this slowness of money being transferred, but it's done for a reason, mm-hmm. to protect the investment. So I think a lot of perceptions are wrong on that. And I think today's show, too, perhaps we need people to come out and get more actively involved in shows like this to tell what the regional council does. It's one of the, I think, the greatest examples of volunteerism regionally. And maybe we need to do a better job explaining what it does, who's on it. It's not just public sector. It's across the board. It really represents your neighbors out there in a 9-county region that volunteer their time every year.
All right. Online, learn more where? Where can people get online?
Regionalcouncils.ny.gov.
Okay. Regionalcouncils.ny.gov. The effort is to be transparent, to put it out there, to let the public see where that money is being spent, and not just sort of big $209 million here, $127 here. It's it really is sort of chunk by chunk. So if you want to learn more, the opportunity is there to do so. And I want to thank our guests for being here. And I know you're going to keep coming back and explaining, because this is a process that's rolling out now. Mm-hmm. Some of it happening now. A little, if you read the Democrat and Chronicle's recent piece, the $498 million out of $500 million committed in our region is significantly more than a couple of other upstate regions that are, you know, still sort of figuring out how they're handing out $500 million. So let's continue these conversations. I want to thank all three of you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bob Duffy, Vinny Esposito, Ann Kress from the Finger Lakes Regional Economic Development Council. Short break, and no big deal, just fixing schools next.